afternoon. I'd like to open this hearing of the House Committee on Education for Friday, January 19th. Thanks, everyone, for showing up. And again, good to see Representative Bielek recovering here with even more energy than ever, which is a little frightening. But we'll proceed from there. We're fortunate enough to have an informational meeting today with presentations from the governor's office first, followed by the Oregon Department of Education and our state superintendent of public instruction. So without any further ado, I'd like to invite James Sager from the governor's office up. And welcome. Glad to have you here.
Thank you. Nice.
Members, I asked Mr. Sager if he'd be willing to come and brief us with the approach taken to public education by the governor's office this session, and with that, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Chair Buckley. For the record, James Sager from the governor's office, and I do appreciate this opportunity to chat with you. There's a document in front of you that just kind of gives the highlights, and what I'd like to do, if I might, is kind of walk you through the thinking behind this, and then, by all means, love the opportunity to address any questions that you have. The whole approach to education, the governor has been saying, you know, we have to break away from this bifurcated silo approach that we've had to education, and we have to look at it as a continuum, a P20 enterprise, as he has expressed it. And so it requires a couple of things. We have, over the last 2 years, we've spent a lot of time aligning curriculum, understanding how students, what they need, how they can move from sector to sector, whether it's from K-12 into the post-secondary system, between community colleges and the universities, between community colleges themselves. I mean, we have this, we do not have a centralized education system in this state. And so what has come out over the last 2 years, and this is kind of my terminology, is we've had this loose confederation of volunteers coming to the table saying this is in all of our best interests, and it is in the best interest of the state of Oregon to have this coordination. Then you begin to think about it and say, well, if we're aligning the system, what we're really moving towards is saying that we need policy to drive budget, so that you take a different look at the way you budget programs, and you start asking yourself, well, why are we investing in this next component? So the entire system, as we prepared the governor's budget and all the legislative pieces that go with it, whether it's a new program or whatever, are all intertwined, so that you can't just kind of peel the onion and throw away these pieces, because they will have a negative impact on each other. So the system has come together to say, the university system, we are as concerned about the K-12 system, what's going to be coming through the pipeline, how we contribute to their success, as the K-12 system is worried about community college and university and Head Start. And so this is really a coordination. The joint boards of education have worked very hard, again, to come together with this collaboration and understanding. And so let me quickly walk you through these points that I pulled out here for you that kind of highlight this thinking. First of all, of course, fully funding Head Start. It's a major first step as you think about how we begin to jumpstart the traditional pipeline of students. We need to level the playing field for our young Oregonians and make sure that they all have an opportunity to be successful in our education system. And then you step back and say, well, then what are they going to be moving into? Well, we need a K-12 system where we've made investments that we can restore programs that have been cut because of budget constraints over the past several years, programs that are vital to student success, art, PE, music, yes, math and science, but we also need that breadth of experience that students need, so you have to invest in that component. We know that class sizes in this state are beyond what most of us consider to be reasonable. And so, again, you begin to look at not just in one biennium, but over several. How do you begin to reinvest in the system that you can move in these directions to where, using the quality ed model for K-12, you can start saying, how do we phase in so that the university system can provide us the teachers, so we can build the capacity so that, in fact, we can reduce class sizes. That was part of his thinking. The So the goal is to enhance our high school graduation requirements and to have more students be successful. The State Board of Education just yesterday, after months and months of deliberation, came up with a new high school graduation requirement that is going to be phased in. That is in response to the governor's call that we needed to really look at that. Again, policy being supported by the budget, the governor purposely put in money to begin to address the kind of work that is going to be needed for the system to move the system to those new higher expectations. We have a situation in the state of Oregon where our younger population is going to the post-secondary system at a lower percentage rate than our older population, and that is moving in the wrong direction. And so one of the pieces that we're advocating for, we're going to be talking about it next week, is the state becoming involved in the Aspire program, where, again, the system reaches back into the middle school and the high school level and begins to help first-generation students understand. In the Aspire program specifically is focused on financial aid. I mean, how do you fill out the FAFSA report? And why is it in my best interest to do that? And that is something that if your family doesn't have that kind of experience and background, you can't expect the 14 or 15-year-old to sit there and go, oh, yeah, this is something that I need to do. And so, again, the system really working together to put the continuum together. We also have designed a series of enterprise performance measures. So we know that the full Ways and Means Committee next week is asked each sector to come in and talk about their performance measures and the requests that are coming forward. But again, as an enterprise, we've identified five high-level enterprise performance measures that each of the sectors are aligning their performance measures to say, how are they contributing towards the success of the whole system? So again, looking at not just their silo, but how they impact each other. Performance audits, the governor has been advocating for. We're advocating for other efficiencies in the system, whether it's the insurance pooling for K-12 and some of our community college people, the ongoing work we started this past biennium with the ESDs and the K-12 system to look at finding efficiencies in central office business functions, using today's technology to really put that to use so that we can free up more dollars for the classroom, those components. And also thinking about the first-generation students, we know that there is a tremendous financial barrier that has been built. In a presentation earlier today to the full Ways and Means, you saw the increase in the tuition for community colleges and universities over the past several years, 60% to 80% increase in tuition. What has occurred is that the state of Oregon has become a high-tuition, low-aid state. And so that has shut the door for many Oregonians who have the aspiration and all the qualifications, but that financial barrier is insurmountable. And so the governor is proposing a new shared responsibility model, as we call it, where for the first time, the state of Oregon is going to be able to tell next year's eighth graders, the financial barrier is gone for you when you're ready to go into the post-secondary system. What it does is it lays out a reasonable expectation of what the student responsibility is in preparing to be able to financially afford school based on what a student can earn with a minimum wage job, what the federal government will contribute to that, and then how the state can make up the difference. And so it will be a substantial step forward in not only greatly enhancing the aid given to the most needy Oregonians, but also beginning to reach into the lower and middle class Oregon families who traditionally have been totally shut out because if you make more than about $31,000 a year, you don't get any assistance, and yet a $15,000 a year college tuition bill is way too much for them to be able to handle. So again, looking at this continuum. We're also focused then on, because of the disinvestment that has taken place not only in our K-12 but in our post-secondary system, how do we provide resources that will shore up the financial stability of our community colleges and our university system? So a lot of energy, and we can talk about this more, has gone into looking at those vital programs to shore up those systems in the state. So again, they have not only the alignment of the curriculum, but they have the capacity to accept additional students coming out of our K-12 system that are ready for post-secondary, that they can accept adult learners who are trying to come back into the system to advance their training, to remain competitive, to help the Oregon economy continue to churn along. And so we're looking at not just the traditional student moving through the pipeline, but we have to look beyond that and say the vast majority of the Oregon workforce is not coming out of 12th grade. The vast majority of the Oregon workforce are adult learners who need opportunities to be able to come back into the system, whether it's community college or the university, and how do we have the capacity and the kind of program delivery that those adult learners are going to be able to connect with. The and I'm sorry, I'm jumping around a little bit, but there are just so many pieces. The other component of this, and again, it kind of ties back to the discussion earlier today about the growth in tuition. With tuition growing as fast as it has, the other focus that the governor and the State Board of Higher Ed looked at was how do we control the cost of tuition. And so a lot of the pieces that have come together look at controlling the growth of the increase in tuition for the university system to the increase in the median family income, so that, again, there's a relationship with the ability to pay and the state, the student, and the family contributing. So we have a variety of programs that are being presented, the investments to go with those programs, and many of them are cross-sector programs. Good example is the investment in our healthcare workforce and the training. We know we are going to need, we do need more nurses and medical healthcare providers out across the state. So as you're talking about the new high school graduation requirements, especially math and science, that's going to better prepare those traditional students to enter into those healthcare careers. The community colleges, the university system, and the Oregon Health Sciences University all have packages together that have been aligned to say, how can we address this healthcare workforce need in the state immediately and long term? So again, a coordination of these projects, as opposed to, gee, let's invest in nursing over here, but, you know, let's do auto mechanics over here. We wanted to make sure that there was a consistency, not to put down auto mechanics at all, because one of the things that we're investing in is the fact that students all don't go on to kind of the traditional 2 or 4 year track, but in fact they need professional technical training as well. And so I'll come back to that in a minute. The governor asked us to look long term, not just for this biennium, but where do we want to be in the year 2025? And the focus has been, and this is a very, maybe it's, we're stretching the aspirations a little bit, but the target is to see, can we get the Oregon workforce to a point where by 2025, 40% of Oregonians have a associate's degree or professional certification, an additional 40% have a university or beyond degree. Now, currently we're at about 27-28% for the four-year degrees, and we're not quite sure where we are with the professional technical and the associate's degrees, because our data system, quite honestly, isn't robust enough to grab all that information. So that's something we're working on. The governor has again supported another proposal to you to consider. But when you begin to think of the system and you think of those kinds of goals, you can talk about where are those strategic, programmatic, and budgetary investments that we need to make in order to allow Oregonians to move towards that aspiration. Along that line, and maybe this is a little more detailed than you want, but some of us are so involved with it, it's fun to share how this is coming together. We have a team that is working on not only aligning the budget information, and Nancy Heiligman, that I know that many of you know, that we've brought her in to help us with a lot of this data crunching and development. But we're also developing what we're calling a yield model, where we can actually look at what are the outcomes today. How many students are successfully completing high school, community college, university? How many students, what is the retention rate? at each of these sectors. What does it take to improve retention and therefore get more students through each of the sectors? When you start to put that data together into this model that we're creating, you begin to be able to make bigger policy decisions and saying, if that's our target, here's where we need to put the investment, and then we can turn to community college, university, whatever, and say, here's your goal. Help us now move in that way. Tell us what elements, what programs, what services you need in order to help us move in that direction. So there has been a great deal of work covered over these past 2 years, and I personally want to thank all the folks from the Department of Ed and Community College and the university system, because they have put in the yeoman's effort into pulling this work together in basically an 18-month period of time. We have a very aggressive plan for the next 2 years, because we hope to come back in 2 more years and tell you how successful we were right now, but also that we're to that next level of being able to help dig even deeper into the system. And the last piece that I do want to touch on, and Representative Lim, you reminded me of it looking at you, and that is the governor's commitment to the capital construction. And the reason you remind me, because I want to answer a question you brought up the other day, so I'll come to that. But in fact, the governor has proposed the largest capital construction investment to the post-secondary system since World War II. This isn't just being good stewards of state assets, which our universities are. It's not just providing additional space and capacity for students, which is wonderful in and of itself. It also is a way to make sure that we have hundreds, if not thousands, of Oregonians working in family wage jobs, helping us maintain the infrastructure of the state. So it makes sense in two ways. And very specifically, Representative Lynn, I know you have a question about the community college list, and if you want to talk about it now, we can. If you want, I'd be happy to answer your question offline too, if you'd like to, whichever way. So, but with that, I just tried to cover all the highlights and be happy to answer questions.
Thank you, Mr. Sager. Before we move to question and answers, I just want to note that Representative Dahlin is ill today, not able to join us, but he hopefully will be back with us early next week. And any questions for Mr. Sager?
Thank you, Chair Buckley. I was wondering, for all the proposals that you brought forth, has the legislation been written for all the components, in particular the last one that you were referring to about, you know, the data system in order to support the, you know, student growth model?
Chair Buckley, Representative Cobb, yes, the data system component is a continuation that we have been working on last session, again this session, kind of the next phase of it. A lot of the additional funding that we have acquired to move this work forward, we received a wonderful grant from the Gates Foundation that we were able to bring to bear on this work, so it hasn't all required general fund. We have been bringing in other partners into this process.
Thank you.
Mr. Crum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Sager, I'm glad to hear all of the different components to the governor's plan. The one thing, though, that I find kind of striking, and I'd like you to address it a little bit, and that is you mentioned helping all students succeed, which I would argue that if we're going to help all students succeed, that means that we really need to have a variety of educational choices available, and yet that's not anything that was mentioned anywhere on the list that you wrote or that you handed us or in your comments, and I apologize, I was a couple minutes late getting here, so I may have missed that part. But I'm just wondering if you could kind of address that, because right now it looks like, you know, we would be heading down the same path of one size fitting all, and if you don't fit our model, you know, that's just kind of too bad.
Well, thank you for the question, Chair Buckley, Representative Crummell, because I probably did skip over that in my trying to be brief here. No, in fact, the governor's direction to the system has been very clear that we need to expand opportunity for students. And let me kind of back that up, even around the discussion that the state board has gone through around the new high school graduation requirements. It is very clear that the focus is not, again, kind of traditional, you're supposed to leave 12th grade, go to community college, go to university, get a degree, move on. But in fact, when you leave 12th grade, you need to be prepared to move on to the next step in your life, whether that is a four-year degree or you want to become a lineman working for PGE. And then you start asking yourself, so what kind of math and science do you need for that kind of career choice? And so part of the new high school graduation requirement, part of this is a carryover and it's part of this new package, is to make sure that the student plan and profile is a usable piece of this high school experience for the student. So that, again, it isn't that you take Algebra 1, Geometry, Algebra 2. It's that you take math above certain levels that prepare you for the next step that you're going. That transitions into the community colleges, and our community colleges have been doing a great job in leading the nation in creating these pathways where, by instead of having just the traditional mindset, again, of saying you have to go through this bank of classes, even though half of them you might not need right away, but you have to complete this bank of 90 credits before you get anything, they're rearranging, and as the very technical term, chunking these classes into smaller pieces so that an adult learner can come into the system, get what they need immediately, leave with a certificate of completion, and then come back in and use that certificate to move on towards an AA or an advanced degree. A lot of that work is going on. The governor has been encouraging that and continues to support that.
Representative Kremla, I'm sure you might want to follow, because I'm assuming that you're thinking of charter schools and alternative education, but we also might want to bring that up with the superintendent when she comes in.
I was planning to. Thank you. I do have a follow-up.
A quick follow-up if you want.
Actually, no. So I'll talk to you after.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Crum. Representative Greenlick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You and I have talked about a proposal I have for meeting with higher ed in Portland. So my colleagues know it, but I'd like to frame it in a general way. In the last session before, the governor was very much involved in economic development as a particular issue. And we made, I think, some significant strides in the economic development area. I don't see discussion of a link between education and economic development in the document you passed out and particularly referencing the question of higher ed in the metropolitan area. As a prior chancellor said, if I don't have a plan for high quality higher ed in the metropolitan area, I don't have a plan for education in Oregon. And as we hear in the economic, in the business summits each year, although unfortunately I was otherwise occupied during this one, one of the barriers to economic development in the metropolitan area, which is the economic engine of the state, is the fact that there is not high quality, well recognized higher education in the metro area. We have a school that doesn't rank in the top 500 in the nation, and I mean in the world, and something needs to be done. Does the governor have any plans to deal with that issue in the near future?
Chair Buckley, Representative Greenlick, thank you for that question. In part, the reason that the economic development component on this sheet isn't there is because I just tried to pull out the education specific, and I appreciate the comment because I should go back and show a better connection. In fact, under education throughout the system is the driver for our economic development, and the governor has made that clear repeatedly. And whether that is training the next series of engineers or advanced scientists, or is training the next electrician, all of those are components that are going to help drive Now, as far as the...
Well, having an education system in corporations will not move to work.
Absolutely. And one of the things that we have heard from the business community is that historically, Oregon was viewed very highly for our education system. And because of budget constraints and other things, that has been tarnished. And so we're trying to turn that around. So the work being done by the boards of education to try and reinvigorate the system is work that the governor is definitely pushing for. How we get there and what that means, whether that means that we need to have a university that is viewed as one of the top 10 in the world or not, I mean, those are the kinds of discussions that are taking place. But those discussions cannot stop us or slow us down from reinvigorating the system until we make kind of those long-term goals in place. So we have had many conversations about your proposal, and it has, I know you're very passionate about it, and I know others are passionate with differences of opinion, and we look forward to continuing that conversation. But again, always driving the system forward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Lim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Jim, thank you very much for mentioning the capital construction, the amount that the community colleges throughout the state. And then can you, for the record, can you provide us the information why some of the community colleges were left out, especially Mount Hood Community College, which is in my district? I do appreciate your comment.
Chair Buckley, Representative Lim, I'd be happy to answer that question. The process that we went through to put together the capital construction package for the entire state was quite amazing. And if you'd been in the room with the whiteboard, you would have been impressed with the matrix that we are trying to see how many projects we could get in and, you know, and have the right kind of funding source to match up to it. When it came to the community college list, a couple decisions were made. One was looking at what is the likelihood that these dollars would be needed and the match would be available during this next biennium. Not that it wasn't an important project, but that, in fact, information that we had on a couple of the projects was that, in fact, that match and the ability to even use that money wouldn't be needed until the next biennium. So rather than kind of tying up that money in the budget, have that bonding authority go to a project that appears would be ready and be able to have the match. We might have a difference of opinion on whether that is true, but that was the conversation, for instance, I had with some of the board members at Mount Hood, trying to put that in place. One of the options that we have made clear, and I'll take the blame for not suggesting this to the governor, and I wish I had, we could put a $1 placeholder in for those projects that if, in fact, the match money did become available, that they could come back to the board and we could talk about how to move that around. But it was really trying to make sure that we aligned the dollars with those projects that clearly looked like they'd be coming online during the 07-09 biennium.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Sager, first of all, I've had a couple of briefings on the shared responsibility model. I'm really enthusiastic about that, and I hope that the leadership will find the money to fund that and help more of our people get an education. I'm concerned, this is my third go-round here as far as education, and I still don't see any emphasis from the governor or Department of Education on TAG. I think it's a part of our population that we're really overlooking. And I hope that we'll find ways to.
I cannot say that for my.
Good job. Playing to the audience.
I'm going to say, playing to the crowd.
I did not know that.
Now, when I first got involved here, I was contacted by parents of TAG students, and I've been pushing DOE. The first session I was here, we discovered they had 2/1/4 people working on TAG, and I've been pushing to get at least a full-time in DOE and more money for that. So I hope, thank you for being here, and I do not.
This is not planned.
It's a little suspicious.
I cannot read the little. The third thing is I appreciate the governor's attention to education. We all support education, know the value of it from an economic standpoint as well as social. I hope that the governor and Department of Education will find some way to look after high growth districts, which I think are terribly disadvantaged under the current formula system. And speaking of the distribution formula, which I'm probably the only one in the building that terribly disagrees with, I would like to know the governor's position, and I'll ask the superintendent's position, on the fact that we have a law that says we're going to equalize the money that goes to each student in the state of Oregon, whether they're from Eastern Oregon or Portland or Salem. We did that with timber money. Timber money from my state, county, and other counties went into the overall fund. It was distributed out. And now we find we've got a situation where some very rich people put a lot of money into one school district, and that doesn't go into the general pot. Do we need to have discussion on that within this body with the governor and the superintendent? And those, I guess, were comments and no questions.
Well, quite a nice list to respond to. Thank you, Representative.
But, Mr. Chair, if you indulge me, Mr. Dallum asked me to ask a question for him.
Are you keeping the list here?
I am, sir.
Mr. Representative Dallum asked if you would comment on what we're doing to strategic plan to counter the Chinese advancements in education. Are we looking at introducing Chinese language to our curriculum? So that was on behalf of Representative Dallum. So that doesn't count against me.
Thank you for that list of questions. Let me make sure that I cover them. There are a number of problems in trying to deal with the differences of 197 school districts. We have fast growth districts. We have districts that are losing enrollment and find it difficult to maintain the quality of educational opportunity that we believe Oregon students should have. And so anytime that you take a finite pie and you try to redistribute it, there are going to be winners and losers. What the governor believes is that we're at that kind of historic opportunity right now, that we can, in fact, put in place a long-term funding proposal whereby, with the growth of the reinvestment, you can begin to address those kinds of differences without there being winners and losers, to make sure that we support those districts that are struggling while we help those districts that have tremendous growth, whether that is in providing program money or the other big issue that we've all been grappling with is how do we help support local communities with capital construction needs. And so there have been a number of groups working on trying to come up with some ideas. If you can, and just to touch on that a minute, the fact is we're putting $500 and some million into the university system through bonding for capital, and we're barely putting a dent in the backlog of deferred maintenance. If you take the $650+ million in backlog of the university system and you translate that to the 197 school districts, I'm sure it's just, beyond the zeros just keep going. And so we really have to find a way to have a stronger partnership with the local communities, both on operations and on capital. The position around equalization, and the governor may correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe I'm correct. He was the person that, I believe he was Attorney General at the time, negotiated the out-of-court settlement agreement that led to our equalization system, so that, in fact, we did not become a state under court order, but in fact allowed the state to come up with a formula that, while it may not be perfect, it was viewed reasonable at the time, and we've tried to live with that and make adjustments over time with weightings and different distribution pieces. So trying to explain what equal means, whether it's equal opportunity, equal access, equal dollars, it is a very challenging question to have all of us come to agreement on. But in fact, the governor believes strongly that we need to make sure that the students in rural Oregon have as strong an opportunity, as broad an opportunity as students in urban parts of the state. And if part of that is that we make sure that money flows accordingly. At least that is an effort on the part of the state to help address that equalization. The last question you asked had to do with competing with China, India, and other countries and teaching Chinese. Actually, I had a wonderful conversation yesterday at lunch with Alan Alley, our new deputy chief of staff. And it was interesting because he pointed out to me all the trips that he has made to China and Korea and other places around the world. For the Chinese business leaders to meet with the Korean business leaders, they speak in English because they didn't learn Korean. When they go to India, they speak in English, etc. Now, that's not to say that English is this, you know, master language, but in fact, that is what has grown to be the language of communication. So rather than picking a language to say this is what every Oregon or American student should learn, his point was what we need to make sure is that Oregon students are exposed to other languages. Because even if you don't know Chinese, if you know a different language, it not only gives you that cultural awareness, which is important, but it also gives you tools by which you can begin to decipher and better communicate. And so not just the language issue, but the cultural issues are what we need to address. And the conversation that was extensive, I know, at the State Board of Education, is the fact that one of the things we probably need to be focusing on is not talking about having 1 or 2 years of high school German. I can still tell you, I can still repeat the first tape of my German class in seventh grade. I can't speak very well in German, but we need to be starting younger. It is the younger students. At the building I was principal at, we had Spanish, and our first, second, and third graders could speak, you know, in Spanish a lot better than our high school students who are learning it for the first time. So we really have to change the way we look at language, and rather than focusing on just one, it's understanding culture and being sensitive to cultural differences and being aware of it and learning languages.
Thank you very much. Just one quick question, M. Sigur, on the data system that has been discussed. Can you let us know where we are with the data system and what the next step is going to be?
Certainly, Chair Buckley, and I know Susan's staff could give you a much more detailed explanation of this. So from the layman's term, we have been working on making sure that we align the K-12 system so that, in fact, schools can communicate with each other and data can be transmitted. You can test to this. You can have a student transfer from one district to another, and God only knows when the file might make it to the student. That should be electronic. Student data material should be electronic. Financial data should be electronic. It should be standardized, and that's kind of this horizontal work. At the same time, the community college and university system has been making sure that they can communicate with each other and preparing for this vertical alignment so that, in fact, the K-12 data can move up to the post-secondary level in such a manner that protects the privacy rights of students, but at the same time, again, the post-secondary system can use that data, and we can not only better counsel and know how students are being prepared for post-secondary, but get that information back to the K-12 system so that they know, are we, in fact, doing as good a job as we can in preparing students. So I always think that you just turn on the computer and, gee, everything should work. The people that know this understand the complicated nature of it, but they're making a very good headway on it. And doing it, I want to compliment them from this perspective, and Doug Costi and others at the department have been working on it. I think they have been very meticulous to make sure that they move forward at such a speed that they feel very secure with the next step. That we're not just moving ahead because this is a great new fad that they heard about, but in fact that they show that it does work and in fact can be sustainable. So,
very good.
Is there really?
Just a quick one, and also to help my friend here, since one of the questions what he didn't address, and I just want to say, I really do appreciate the list, and I appreciate the fact that we are having conversations this session about how do we restore education in Oregon, which we haven't had here for a number of years. And as many people know, one of the reasons I am here and ran after having been a principal is that we really do need to focus again on education and doing the things that are listed in this list. I mean, there's nothing here that I can see that anybody reasonably looking at our system would not understand we need to put back in. But one of the issues that he came up, and it's one that I worked with my whole career, and that is how do we take the system that we have and we add to it and we make sure that we meet the needs of all of our kids, including this group of parents who are here that are representing the TAG kids. And so that, the question I'm asking is, you know, where's the governor on that issue of TAG?
Thank you. We received a list that in very small type was a legal page long from all the education sectors, and I believe it totaled about $1.3 billion of requests. And so I don't want to diminish the value of any of those pieces that are on that list, because I don't think any of the sectors tried to pie in the sky. These were all very important issues. But what we're trying to do, like I said, is look at over a 4 to 6 year period of time, how do you restore these things, and which were the component pieces that, working with the various partners, we thought were most important now, and what we can then add the next biennium. I believe the proposal has been to have a full-time person at the Department of Education on TAG to oversee the TAG. If the legislature comes up with the money to make that possible, the governor isn't opposed to that at all. That is one of those important pieces that we need to add. It's just a matter of how you prioritize the win.
This is my follow-up, and I will say this to these parents, because it also puts you on the spot.
Okay.
And as a high school principal, I really do believe the statutes are clear, and it is the responsibility of the local communities, and we're given money in local communities to do what as we can. And part of that responsibility is to meet the requirements that we already have there for TAG and to provide programs within the there. And it takes a commitment from the people in their communities to meet with their school boards and their administrators. It is an allocation issue with respect to the money. And I know there are a lot of difficult things, but this is a unique group of people if you really are looking at the true definitions. And they have unique needs that are unlike any of the other people in the system. They are just as unique as those students that are being helped through IEPs and other programs.
Mm-hmm.
And having dealt with kids over the years, there are ways to find and do things that don't cost a lot of money. It takes a commitment of people, and it takes a commitment in local districts. And I would, just using this form, really tell those people sitting back there in school boards and administrators and teachers to recognize how unique these individuals are in their schools and what a real prize we have, and we shouldn't lose the opportunity to give them the opportunities they need to expand. Because if you look at our data, and I know that Susan can attest to this, our goal is to have that continuous improvement model, and every student can improve. And if you look over time, those students oftentimes are not showing much progress because they are meeting the requirements when they were in second and third grade. And so they aren't showing that progress. And I commend this department and also the governor's office in making sure that we continue to talk about continuous improvement, every student. Because if you really do that, districts are going to have to come to face the idea that this student passed it when he was in third grade, the fifth or eighth grade benchmark. And so he has another benchmark he's working on, and they have an obligation to help him get there. So hopefully those kinds of things will be done. And I know there are teachers out there that work their entire careers trying to make that happen for kids.
And Chair Buckley, if I may, thank you. I mean, you're absolutely right on. I agree with you. The governor agrees with you on that. Hopefully, with the governor's budget, and if the legislature chooses to add more to it, so be it. But that it begins to open up that door for districts who have struggled over the past several years with, you know, how do we cut and balance with the restoration programs at the local level. They can do it. And I also know that the parents behind me are concerned because we need to have state level people that you can, that the districts can turn to get advice and help. And so this does take, again, that partnership. And so we look forward to that.
Representative Kopp and Representative Lynn have comments, but hopefully they're short because they do want to move on to the superintendent. Representative Kopp?
Thank you, Chair Buckley. Mine's about 10 seconds. I would ask that you possibly, Mr. Sager, connect with the Department of Education, see how many talented, gifted students drop out because they're not being challenged. And that starts anywhere from sixth grade on up. And then the sense of urgency will become very apparent.
Thank you, Representative.
Representative Lim. So thank you very much, Mr. Chair. My, we will be also 10 seconds. And I just want to say thank you for the emphasizing learning the foreign languages. And I heard that you were someone speaking more than three languages. They call it multi-language. Mm-hmm. If they speak two languages, by how we call it, bilingual. And if they speak one language, they say it's American. And so, you know, I don't want that our children growing up like I am, since I came here late and learning English so late, and I'm still having a difficulty in expressing my thought, but that, you know, I want all the American children learn the foreign languages when they were real young, so they can come out a lot better than I am.
A high benchmark, Representative.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Sager, thank you so much for your time and your work. We look forward to future conversations. Sumi Nagasu, if you would like to come up. Members, I would like to just kind of give a kind of point to the clock. What we'll try to do is make sure we have a good 45 minutes with the superintendent for her presentation, question and answers. But I would like to leave time for the Representative Wisnik fan club. If any members from the TAG parents would like to speak afterwards, I want to make sure we have some time for that as well. So just please keep that in mind. Folks in the audience, I need to remind you, I neglected to do this at the start. If your cell phone is on right now, even if the volume's down, it creates static with the system. So if you would be so kind as to turn your cell phone all the way off, if you could, and that way we won't have the static coming through. Thank you very much. Very pleased to be able to welcome our superintendent of schools, Susan Castillo. Thank you very much for taking the time, and I look forward to your presentation and to your responses to the questions that have already been raised here today. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, Susan Castillo, the superintendent of public instruction for the state of Oregon. I am very happy to be before this committee and look forward to working with all of you this session, as we have very important work in front of us to help the children of our state and to help our schools. Please know that my department is ready to help you with whatever your needs are regarding education, and from pre-K through 12, and the work that we're doing jointly with our community colleges and higher education partners in the governor's office. In your packet, you have information on the actions that were taken by the State Board of Education yesterday on the new high school diploma requirements, and information about key staff members at the department who can help you in the various areas of education. 4 years ago, when I took over in this position, our economy, as you remember, was not doing too well, and our schools were hurting, and we were cutting programs, and staff and class sizes were increasing. And believe me, I do not want to see those days again, and I'm sure you don't either. But I do have to say that one of the things that did happen was that those hard times have made our schools and the Department of Education smarter, tougher, and more efficient. And we can confidently say that student performance in reading and writing and math and science is rising, and that the achievement gap is closing. And we are, of course, not where we want to be on student performance right now, but we absolutely are making progress. I am very supportive of the governor's $6.06 billion budget for our schools. However, I plan to continue working with you on trying to see if we can get that figure up to at least $6.3 billion before you adjourn to help our schools. I'd like to talk a little bit about the department, and I want to start by just acknowledging the people who are there and the amazing educators who are at the Department of Education. They are dedicated and professional men and women who are working every day to help our schools and to help our students and really step up in a big way every day. We began reorganizing the department in 2004 and believe that it has put us in a better place to provide more and better support for the State Board of Education to help them with the very important policy work that they're engaged in. We have fewer top-level management positions, and we have been consolidating offices and improving our data collection and analysis to deliver quicker responses to you and to other stakeholders. We are reviewing our assessment system and our achievement standards as we speak, and this will mean more accurate test scores in reading, math, and science for students in grades 3 through 8. We are very happy that the governor in his budget is reinvesting not only in our schools, but also in the Department of Education. The department budget will increase our ability to deliver support data and technical assistance to our schools and to and education professionals. The specific investments that are a priority for us that are in the governor's budget have to do with the development of a growth model, which will enable us to have a better system of measuring the growth and our achievement levels for all of our students, and provide better data than we currently have on how we measure the success of our schools and our students. And to the TAG advocates who are in the room, I know they are very supportive of us developing the growth model, as is everyone in our education system, because we know that it is better information about each and every student and will help us. And also another thing that I believe is going to help our TAG students, I'll just mention that while I'm on this point, is the requirement that all students have a plan and profile in high school, which really helps to focus on every single student and setting targets for them and having a better way of measuring their progress. And certainly we think that that's going to be beneficial for our TAG students as well. The other item that made the governor's budget that we were very happy about is the next phase of the project called KIDS, which you were talking about with Mr. Sager. This is last session the legislature invested in us on phase two of this KIDS project, which is one of the key components of our data collection system, and it's going to centralize and standardize our student records, reduce redundancies and inefficiencies, and provide for a more timely exchange of records when students transfer from school to school, and also enable us, as you heard Jim Sager talk about, being able to share information throughout our education enterprise system. So with this added investment, we get to take it to the next level and expand the work on that system. And then thirdly, money is also in the governor's budget to help us develop an assessment literacy trainings to improve the ability of our educational professionals to better understand the relevance of the assessment results that they are getting, so that they can then have that information to make better decisions about how they help our students. One other item that did not make the governor's budget, but we will continue to advocate for funding for, and that is to continue investments and help us with our efforts to improve student literacy in our schools. We have really been making some progress in this area, focusing a lot more on adolescent literacy, and through a number of efforts that are underway in our state, we are emerging as one of the leaders in our country on the work that we're doing on adolescent literacy, and believe that that is really, really important for us to continue to make progress on. So we will continue to have discussions with you about that this legislative session. In addition to the top priority, of course, for the State School Fund, We are very committed to supporting implementing the new high school diploma requirements that were passed yesterday by the State Board of Education, moving beyond the SIM and CAM that we have had in place, really moving from certificates for some students to higher, more rigorous diploma for all students. We're very excited as we move forward making this transition and having those conversations with you about that. The governor has put in his budget $10 million to help us get started on the diploma work, and we are on it. And what we're doing in the next phase of this is creating a statewide implementation task force that will bring together people from all over the state, people throughout the education system, and other stakeholders, the business community, experts, to put together an implementation plan that will not only help us schedule out how we will implement these new this new higher rigor for our students so that we can have a successful implementation, but then also do estimates on the costs that will be associated with helping us get there, so that we know that if we make these targeted investments, they're going to help us deliver and get there for our students and our schools. So that work we will absolutely be working with you on as well. Let's see. The other one is fully funding Head Start. As you know, we're only funding about 60% of the eligible children. They are the poorest of the poor in our state, and we want to fully fund Head Start. The governor's budget does have funding for that as well. Expanding full-day kindergarten. We know that we have been making some progress on that in recent years, and we want to continue those efforts. We are not talking about mandatory full-day kindergarten, but really seeing how we can expand access to full-day kindergarten in our state, and I will be having conversations with you about legislation around that. You know, as we continue to look about the need for having more college graduates and a more skilled workforce, it all starts with pre-K and kindergarten, so we have got to step up and help more kids get access to that. The governor's budget and also contains $5 million to help us with mentoring for our educators, very, very important investment, and we know we're losing too many new teachers because it is very, very hard work, and we are not supporting them to the level that we need to be supporting them. So we are very excited about that in the governor's budget. We support the efforts to deliver more accountability and the governor's proposal on audits. And I know the legislature is also interested and has been working on this issue as well. So we support those efforts and we'll be working with you on those proposals. So we are excited and optimistic about what we can accomplish this session. It is a new day in Oregon where we get to talk about reinvesting in education at all levels, which is wonderful to be having those conversations. And as we do our work, of course, we're working with you and working with all of the other partners that we work with in education and the business community, Stanford Children, the PTA, Chalkboard, of course, OEA, COSA, OSBA, OBA, and OBC, and all the other acronyms. This is so great that we have so many wonderful partners, everybody working to help our schools and to help our education system. So feeling very hopeful and optimistic this session.
Thank you very much. Use too many acronyms to ask you that. Let me go back and find them all. We can make a list for anybody.
Yes.
And use that afterwards. I'm predicting that this panel might have some questions.
Yes.
So, do you have any to start with? You didn't have any in the last round. And I don't mean to pinpoint you. I can come back to it. But if you do have, I can give you the opportunity to start.
Well, I think that this probably is more applicable, actually, for if we they would be able to answer it better, I think, being parents, as the folks that I wanted to ask a question about. So we can build off on that part.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Buckley. Susan,
yes.
I'm interested in knowing what your implementation, if you have a chart about the implementation of a database system, that we've already started the great DBI initiative, but what will it, you know, what's your timeline to have this consistency and things standard within your
kids project?
Yes.
I don't have those dates in front of me, but I can get those for you, Mr. Chair and Representative Comp. Doug Costi is leading those efforts at the department, and if you'd like, we can make sure that we get him in front of your committee, and he can take you through all the steps involved. It's quite a large project, and we did have some pilots that we were able to learn through during the last interim because of your investment last session, and that has brought us forward, and now we're going to expand those efforts based on what we've learned in those pilots, and we can give you information about that.
Okay, thank you. Follow? Actually, unless the entire committee wants it, I'm definitely an education freak. You know, I can personally contact Doug and okay. get it, but, you know, unless the entire committee wants to see the information, I just needed the conduit for that. You bet.
Thank you, Representative Kremel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Superintendent Castillo, nice to see you again,
nice
as
to
always.
See you too.
With regards to the question that I asked earlier of Mr. Sager, I thought I would like to see if you'd like to respond to that from a standpoint of what we're doing with our, you know, in the government's governor's proposal, excuse me. There's not really any mention of any kind of choice for students and taking a look at charter schools and that sort of thing, although I did notice in your legislative package here, one bill that would remove encourage or require that charter schools have an independent board so they could take advantage of the federal funding. But I wanted to give you an opportunity to kind of respond to the question that I had there.
Well, we today have 70 charter schools and more in the pipeline, so it's we have been very busy developing charter schools in the state of Oregon, and that continues to be an option for communities. And as you know, it's really running a school is a very huge endeavor, and I think for some people who start out on creating a charter school because they have a new idea or an interest of maybe a different approach they want to help children be successful in school, once they start working on it, realize that it's a pretty tough thing to get involved in.
Yeah.
And so some people maybe don't follow through, but we have a lot of people who have stepped up and said, you know, we want to offer a different choice or a different opportunity for school for children to be successful, and they get a groundswell of support in their community, and then, you know, go forward to their boards of locally elected boards of education. So today we have 70, and as I said, there are more in the pipeline, and that does continue to be an avenue for people to be innovative and create new opportunities for students in their communities. And aside from that, districts. I guess what I would say is that as we take a look at across the state on what is happening in our schools today, there is a lot of innovation happening in Oregon schools today. The work that we're engaged in with closing the academic achievement gap has brought about so much change and new ways of how we approach our work, and it's very it's been very helpful in getting us to really have a more student-focused education system in our public schools, really changing how teachers work together to meet the needs of all students. It's just brought about a lot of innovation and change. It's an exciting time in our public schools. So I think there are lots of opportunities for schools to be engaged in new ways of how we do our work. And, you know, as we have this opportunity in this next session to start reinvesting in our schools, it is an opportunity for us to think about how we use these resources in new targeted ways to help children be successful, and that we don't think about, you know, going back to maybe some of the things that we've done in the past. We do need to rebuild a lot and reinvest in things that we lost. But I'm also, you know, my message is that we also need to be thinking about new ways of how we make this reinvestment to create more success for more kids. And we have lots of great work out there that we can use as examples of best practices and new ways about how we do use our resources to help more kids be successful.
Thank you. Can I ask you a quick follow-up? The question will be quick. I noticed in the legislative package that you have a bill to get rid of SIM and CAM. Last legislative session, this is 180 degrees from where you were last session. Last session there were a couple of different bills. The House Audits Committee even made the recommendation to get rid of SIM and CAM. I'm just curious as to why, and every education advocate in the building was saying, no, no, don't get rid of SIM and CAM, it's the greatest thing since sliced bread. Your office, your staff was all saying, no, you know, this is, but all of a sudden there's a 180 degree turn around, and it's, yeah, let's get rid of it. Help me understand that. Why is that?
I really like this question, Mr. Chair and Representative Crummell. Thank you for the opportunity to talk about this. Last session, the conversation was really about that while we knew at the time that it was time for us to talk about moving on beyond SIM and CAM, to have passed a bill last session when we did not have work in place that created where we would go next, I think just would not have been very helpful to our schools. So what our conversation was about last session to the legislative leadership was, please, let's hold off on this legislation this session. Let us do work at the state board level, working with the board on the diploma and really working in doing the work that they have accomplished and that they decided on yesterday. Let us get that in place and then have that conversation about moving, you know, and then coming back and talking about these certificates. SIM and CAM, as you know, when they were passed in the 90s, were groundbreaking ideas. It put Oregon on the map as a great innovator in public education, because what they have been about, and there's still lots of confusion about this, but in very simple terms, what they have always been about, which they stand for a Certificate of Initial Mastery and a Certificate of Advanced Mastery, but they're known as these controversial acronyms, SIM and CAM in Oregon. They're about establishing high standards for students on what we want them to know and be able to do, creating a way of measuring whether they're reaching those standards through our assessment, and then creating opportunities for our students to have a relevant learning experience through the CAM. Well, we still believe in all of that and are going to continue to do that work. But what SIM and CAM have been about is some kids getting to that level of rigor. Only a third of the students today in our schools get a SIM. And so we are moving now with this new high school diploma from some kids getting certificates to all kids getting a rigorous high school diploma, which is where we really need to go. And so we are now in a better place to move on and to, you know, and to build on the work that we have been doing. There has been great work in our state around SIM and CAM, but unfortunately it just wasn't something that was relevant to so many students and even to people, to educators, and it created a lot of confusion about what we were trying to accomplish in our schools. Everyone knows what a diploma is about. And to focus on a rigorous diploma, we believe, is really going to bring much more meaning to what we're trying to accomplish and help our students accomplish in our schools. And I'm very excited about this work that we're doing.
Thank you. I have Representative Wiesnitz, then Representative Greenlee, Representative Clem. So,
thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll be brief. Thank you, Superintendent, for your testimony. So we don't forget these people back here. And my friend here, Representative Roblin, explained to the people about how the local school boards get the money to maybe support the TAG programs, but I still hope you and your budget, because the legislature doesn't prove they give you amount of money to spend to do people, and I hope you'll find some way to fund this and create this full-time TAG director at your level to help these people and help these school districts run an effective TAG program. I do get a lot of constituent mail about this, and I support in their request. Could you please comment on how you would spend the additional $260 million that above the governor's proposal? How would you spend that? You're saying you're proposing we're going to work for 6.3 and the governor's offered 6.06. How would you spend that money?
Mr. Chair, Representative Wiesnitz, I know I have been engaged in some conversations with a legislative leadership around that, if that were to be a possibility, which I certainly hope it is. we know that you all have an interest in making sure that when you make this reinvestment in K through 12, that we are going to use every dollar of that in the best possible way to create success for kids. So I know that there are some discussions happening where if we got that additional money, that we would perhaps put some sidebars on what we, how that money would be used for our schools, and that there would be a list of things that maybe our school districts could look at to reinvest in, things that we know would make a significant difference on the performance of our students, whether it has to do with class size or professional development investments or there are other things that would, a full day kindergarten or some other options that might be on this list that districts could use that money for, on reinvesting to create more success for more kids. So we are very interested in working with the legislature on making the best use of that money, and all of us working together on making a plan for how we make sure that that's going to happen. And our schools are ready to work with you on delivering results for this investment that we're going to be making, and I'm very, I look forward to having conversations about how we make the best use of that money.
Mr. Chair.
Follow-up, please.
Thank you.
Superintendent, I think that's good, but I think it'd be good and helpful, this committee, if you have some ideas, some specific ideas that maybe were on your budget list that got cut out by the governor. I think it'd be helpful to see this.
Thank you, and we'll share
that
with you.
Representative Greenlee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have two questions, if I may.
Please.
I didn't hear any comment in your opening remarks about No Child Left Behind, and I'm very much concerned the effect that that has on our school system and where it's going, and there's been some national discussion about it now. Could you comment on the situation around No Child Left Behind and how you think it is affecting Oregon schools and what you might recommend about our position on?
Absolutely. Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Greenlee. I have the good news and the challenging parts of No Child Left Behind. And let me start with the good part, and that is what the law is about, and that is closing the academic achievement gap and really helping us focus and requiring that we disaggregate the data of all of our student populations and really shine the light on what's happening with the academic achievement gap and helping us, not only here in Oregon, but across this country, take a look at what has been happening in education. And as a result of doing that, great work is underway to address the gap, and we are making progress on that in Oregon, and it is helping children who didn't get the help and support that they needed in the past. And so that has been terrific. The challenges with the law is that there are so many requirements, reporting requirements for our schools, data gathering requirements for our schools, and a lot of work for the Department of Education as the administrator of this act, and all of the reporting requirements we have to the federal government. We all did get some money to help us with all of this, but it was not fully funded, so that certainly we would love it if we saw No Child Left Behind fully funded. And we have new leadership in Congress who in the past complained about it not being fully funded. So I'm hopeful that now we have a change in leadership, that maybe they will fully fund it. And so we'll see what happens on the federal level, but certainly we need more help from the federal government. The other thing is that it created some requirements on how we measure school and student success that we don't believe gives us an accurate picture, which is why we have been wanting to develop this growth model, which would give us a better, more accurate picture of what's happening with our schools. The federal government under No Child Left Behind did offer to allow states to do some growth models as an experiment and encouraged all of us to submit proposals. We did. They said no to our plan. And so we are going to go forward and develop it anyway and show the federal government that it is that it does provide better information, and we believe that eventually they will allow us to use it in Oregon so that we can consolidate all of the reports that we do and just make it easier for people to understand the reports that come out about the performance of our schools. But it has created many challenges, and some of the sanctions to us don't make sense, and they're not based in, you know, on good research. And so we're hopeful that as this bill now is up for reauthorization, that we're all working on a national level. I work with my peers. We're working with our federal delegation and the new leadership in Congress and in the Senate. And we're hoping that we can make some improvements to make it work better. We don't see No Child Left Behind going away. It has bipartisan support in on the federal level. But we think that there is an opportunity for us to be able to work with them to make it work better for all of us. But as I said, you know, there are the benefits of helping us all focus on in this area that we really did need to sharpen our focus on, and then we still need to work on improving it and making it work better.
Yes, thank you.
Four members of my immediate family, my daughter, two sons-in-law, and my daughter and my sister-in-law are teachers. And the story is a sort of similar one. My daughter has been teaching since 1980. She's, I think, a master teacher who does special ed and a variety of other things. And I've been hearing her say now, gee, I've been teaching 26 years, 27 years. I can retire in four more years. And I mean, that just really shocks me in a sense. When I probe, it's pretty much the same story that I get from all four of them, a pretty consistent story. They don't feel honored. They don't feel respected. They feel the odds are stacked against them doing a good job. They get requirements that come down from a variety of places that don't seem to relate to the objectives that they have in teaching their kids. They're buying their own copy paper in many places and bringing snacks to their kids so they won't be hungry in the morning. And we're going to lose, in this case, four master teachers as soon as they can get out of the system. That seems to me to be a real problem. Do you have any plans in place to really try and do something to make teachers feel like they're really an honored part of the system and that they're contributing in ways and to create the environment where their answer would be, oh my God, I'm going to be 65 and I'm going to think I have to quit now, rather than, oh, I'm 53 and I can quit, and we'll see, what would you do? Is I'll get a job as a barista at Starbucks or something where I'd be appreciated.
Mr. Chair, Representative Greenlick, you know, we have been through a very difficult time in our state for our teachers. It has been very, very difficult. This recession hit our schools terribly hard. And, you know, we've had growing class sizes, some of the largest class sizes in the country, and lots of programs going away that have made their jobs more and more difficult. And, as you said, more mandates being put on our schools. So they have been through some very difficult times. And so, you know, now we have an opportunity to turn that around, and we are going to turn that around with this budget, the governor's proposed budget, and the work that all of you are, you know, that we're all engaged in and focused on for this legislative session. We are going to turn things around for our teachers and our students. It is a good day. and we are doing more to celebrate success and celebrate our educators. One of the things that I've been doing is putting together a Celebrating Student Success Awards banquet. It's a statewide, wonderful celebration where we celebrate great work that's happening in our schools, and we provide awards, and we have a wonderful benefit dinner at the Oregon Convention Center, and we have videos produced on these wonderful schools and show their great work. But we don't celebrate our educators enough, and we need to do more of that, because they do some of the most important work there is. And we want them to feel valued and acknowledge them for the great work that they're doing. And we do need to do more. But my message to our educators is things are going to get better. And we all need to, you know, be working together. But we need to acknowledge that we have been through some very, very difficult times. And a lot of people have really struggled. But as I said, you know, we've turned a corner and things are going to get better, and we all need to be supporting one another. The other thing that's happening is we're changing how we do our work, and we have been investing energy and expertise and dollars into developing stronger leaders in our schools. We've had a grant through the Wallace Foundation that we know when we have strong leaders in our schools, great things happen for teachers and for students in those schools. And we need to make more of that happen. And strong leaders know how to provide wonderful learning environments for their teachers, and they're supported and they're excited about the work that they're accomplishing together for students, and they're creating success for all kids in their schools. We need to make more of that happen, and more of that is happening in our state as we build on those best practices. There's a lot to build on. I think it's an exciting time, but I have to validate when I hear a statement like that. Yeah, we've been through tough times, and a lot of people have really struggled.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I have Representative Clem and then Representative Lynn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to synthesize a few things that I've heard, and I myself am neither talented nor gifted, so bear with me here while I try and get this out. I grew up watching Superintendent as a TV reporter at IVG. I would sit and...
You're being your homework representative.
Well, there's my principal right there. Let's talk to him. He knows my grade. It wasn't good. And I always knew she was a fantastic communicator. Yeah, I watched how she did the news. When I saw her in my ballot, I was very excited because I knew she could tell the story about what's going on in our state. But what I've learned in the last probably 4 years of working with her when I was chair of the Student Assistance Commission, she was really a fantastic listener, and not just to things like last session. You know, she heard the concerns about SIM and CAM, and she heard from her student advisory group, I'm sure, about how this is not meaningful to the students without some other incentives, and has evolved along with others to a different position on it. But also, you know, she has to listen to school boards about what they would want to do with that $200 million that Representative Wisnat talks about, because that's not her call. And she has to listen to the legislature about what we want her to do. And what I wanted to do is give you an opportunity, because I've participated in about four things that you do that involve the community. And these were things, you know, two, three, 4 years ago, in varying degrees, she brought me in to help be part of community processes on picking schools that, and honoring them who would close the achievement gap. To Representative Greenlick's point, picking teachers of the year and taking applications and honoring, and these are all, you know, maybe you can help fill us in, kind of large community efforts, and we had 30, 40 different people from business and all over the state involved in these processes. The Student Advisory Council I went to talk to, and she can fill us in a little bit, but these are high school students who come in and advise her, and I don't think that had been done before. And I learned as the OSAC chair that if SIM and CAM, back when we thought it might work and still in some way we're going to mean something, we should probably attach a scholarship to it from those students, because otherwise there's almost no point. And then personally, I asked her to come out to Waldo Middle School and listen to what they're facing, because it's a place that under standardized testing really has a lot of challenges because they have huge needs. And she came out and listened to exactly what they had to say. So I wanted to thank you. But the community who has participated in all these things you've done to bring them in, and I'm sure the legislature, I'm new, so I don't know how last session went, but I want to thank you for being a good listener and also telling the story of our schools to the public who, you know, don't get to be part of those groups.
Thank you. We have been trying to, Mr. Chair and Representative Clem, we have been working hard to engage more people in the work and to bring more voices to the table to help advise us and guide us on making better decisions about how we help students be successful. And my student advisory team, oh my gosh, they give us such wise advice. They have just been fantastic. Every time I meet with them, I'm just blown away by they are amazing, and I think the thing that moves me the most about them is that they love that we value their opinion, and because they really want to help their fellow students and help their schools get better and help all kids have a more meaningful, you know, learning experience. And so that's been really, really great. I love meeting with my students.
Representative Lim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm glad that we served the Twitter in the Senate. And she moved up, I moved down to House. Anyway, my question is, CNN can since the inception 1991, and it didn't work well after 15 years. Only, as you mentioned, the one-third is taking advantage of it, two-thirds are not doing it. And what is your opinion why this didn't work? And then is it not enough incentive, or whether it should work if it required it? Because the children, when they don't require it, chances are they're not going to do it. And also the universities and higher ed, they don't take the students in and can at all. So why we failed the CNN CAN is considered the 21st century, second to none, you know, that I heard all of good stories, and now we are taking that away. And could you explain to us why that happened?
Mr. Chair, Representative Lim, well, you just basically did a wonderful job hitting the points that I would, you know, point out on this. And I think it is that we didn't make it a requirement. So for students, when I've talked to students about it, they would say, so it has no meaning. What you know, employers don't ask about CIM and CAM. Colleges don't ask about CIM and CAM, and yet you're asking me to do this. And, you know, if you want me to do this, make it mandatory. And maybe we should have made, you know, maybe that would have been the route to go. The other thing is, when we did pass this legislation, our state was going through major changes on how we were funding our schools because of, you know, Measure 5 and all of that during the 90s. And things were changing with school budgets, and we didn't really adequately fund. We needed to do lots of professional development around this and this new approach to how we were going to do the work and all of this. And that, those kinds of investments weren't made in our schools. And there were some districts that went out and got grant funds to help them be able to get started and do professional development around it. And they are some of the districts who today continue to be leaders on that work around CIM and CAM and have done wonderful work around CIM and CAM. But it was just something that we didn't... you know, we needed to, we've learned a lot about trying to help students get to higher levels of achievement through that voluntary, you know, these certificates, trying to help students, motivate students to go after these higher levels of achievement. And we now believe that going this route with the more rigor in the high school diploma, the diploma does have more meaning for our students, that this is going to help us move there. And so I think what happened, too, is that we just got into this sort of pattern of... only some kids were getting there, and we would talk about some kids getting CIM CAM. Today, it needs to be for all kids. We need all kids reaching higher levels of rigor and getting to our standards, and that's where we want to go, and that's what the new diploma work is about. So it's acknowledging what great work CIM and CAM is about, but we need to make that higher rigor for all children.
Can I ask one more question?
Yes, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is just a general question. When you look at the world education system, China and India, they are producing more engineers than ours. And then they are willing to work the 20%, the similar job, what we are learning in the United States, earning in the United States. So we have the same quality education, they produce more engineers, and in the United States we produce more lawyers than engineers. And then I'm keeping concerned the directions we are going. And this is a big issue, and I know you don't have a full answer of this, but in this global economy, how could we compete if we don't produce enough engineers, enough skilled workers, then our future is not bright?
Mr. Chair, Representative Lim, I was in China a little over a year ago and visited schools and saw firsthand what they're doing over there. And as you said, all of these engineers that they're producing, there's no way that our country can compete with China just on their population basis, just so huge. However, We know that we need to step up our efforts, and that that is what this high school work is about. It is about making sure that we bring all of our students, that we have higher expectations for all of our students, to get them to higher levels of skill and knowledge, because that is where we need to have them be prepared, because they're not going to just be competing with other people in Oregon or even in this country, but on a global scale. And we need for them to have the skills. And part of the graduation requirements does include developing skills on global literacy and analytical skills, technical skills, and so we will be working on those as well and incorporating those into the new diploma requirements as well, so that when our students leave, they're ready for the changes that are going to come ahead in this 21st century global economy. And so that's what this work is all about. And so we have taken a major step with this diploma work in Oregon to help get us going on that path and the direction that we need to be going.
Thank you very much.
President Roden.
I also want to say thank you for being here and for the efforts. And I, when I raised my hand, it was really to answer part of Representative Lim's answer, in part, because I think that from my perspective, being one of those schools that did go out and get grants and invested in SIM and CAM and saw some wonderful things happen, I really do believe it was the disinvestment in education during those years when the economy was going bad that didn't give SIM and CAM a chance. And there are some teachers out there who have invested a lifetime and a career into making it work and have done some wonderful things, and there are a number of students that are out here in our communities that are going to benefit from the work that was done. So I like to make sure that we acknowledge the work and the people, because they worked very hard to get there. We didn't invest in it enough to get there. If you look at the quality education model, a model built here in this institution, it tells us what we need to do if we really want to get to the 90%, let alone the 100% that No Child Left Behind has said that we need to be at. And so I think there were a number of things that happened that way. And the other thing, you know, I was a product of the 50s and 60s in education, and it was the time of Sputnik, and it was a time when the national policy wasn't around this big thing like called No Child Left Behind. It was around engineering and math, and because of that, our federal government invested in training teachers and doing the things they needed to make them more exciting back in the classroom, and that led me to be a math and science major. It led me to go to school, and there was a whole lot of engineers and science people when I was going to school. That was the deal. But then our policy changed because we got upset in our country that we were making all these math and science people, and humanities didn't get a chance. So we went through the 70s phase of humanities having their opportunity, and we invested as a federal government in policies that talked about the humanities. And if you look at what we've done, if you look at the people who were produced in our schools during that phase, we had a bloom in the arts and in literature and in all of those kinds of things. It, from my perspective, it has to do with national policy based on the kinds of things that we need in our country. And I, for one, do not see No Child Left Behind as a national policy on anything with regard to putting a course of action available for people to achieve things. And I'm hopeful, because I was hopeful in No Child Left Behind, that we will take these individual plans that are required now in the diploma program, and we will start saying we have to invest in those kids when they make that plan. And when we have a student who really does start telling everybody that he really wants to be an engineer when he's in third or fourth grade, that the avenue is there for him to get what he needs to feel like he is going to be an engineer, and that the people who enter, the teachers that come in contact with him, or her, better say that, that I have daughters that are that way, and they'd be sure to remind me, that they would make sure that child is getting those things and understanding the relationship between the math he's learning, the science he's learning, and that goal that they have, and that we honor each of those goals. And that's the other part that we haven't done very well in this country. So, you know, I think we have an opportunity right now to do a whole lot of things around education, and because we're starting to reinvest in education, the opportunity exists to do those things. We will be judged in the next 10 years on whether we took that opportunity and did the right things with it and invested in the right ways and set the right goals. But we need a national, in my opinion, a national statement of purpose in education for our kids and our schools and so on, to help, that's different than what we have right now, that focuses on some of those bigger goals, to start making sure that we make engineers and artists and all of those people, and that we recognize that in our society. So I appreciate all the efforts that you made, and I agree 100% with your statement about why we shouldn't have moved away from Simon Cam without having a vision to put it in its place. And so I appreciate that the board has worked towards providing that new vision. I hope we can continue to work on really honing it. So thank you. That's mostly a statement.
Don't you wish you was your principal?
He's talented.
Thank you, Representative. Superintendent, just very quickly, thank you for all your work and your collaboration with the governor's office and with the Board of Higher Ed as well to address the full spectrum of need. I'm very excited about what's happening, the developments that are happening, the idea that we can't have a seamless education system where the students that Representative Wilkins is speaking of can move through the pre-K into our elementary schools, middle schools, high schools, into our higher ed system in a way that actually benefits those students. And I was very appreciative, and I know you didn't mention this, and we'll probably have more of a discussion on this when we bring forth the legislation to require the science classes, but to actually make sure the high school curriculum matches up with the college entrance requirements as part of that seamless system is essential. So I don't have any questions for you at this point. You've held the microphone very well for us. I really appreciate it. I appreciate you coming down to Jackson County and celebrating the teachers at Phoenix Elementary School for their achievement there. And again, thank you for your work. Thank you for being with us. I look forward to the conversations to come over the course of this session.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Members, at this point we have, we didn't clear the room before the next committee hearing, but we do have about 15 minutes. I would like to offer if any of the green tag folks would like to come up and talk about why you're here, and perhaps if you would be willing to entertain questions, that would be also wonderful.
Sure. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Carol Curry. I live here in Salem. I have two daughters in the West Salem High School, part of the Salem-Keizer District. One's a TAG student. One's a disabled student. She has epilepsy, and so she has her, but she's still taking honors classes and doing well. I've been volunteering in the school system since they played with clay in kindergarten, and now I'm still serving the high school athletic and education boosters. And I guess what I'm here to address is the fact that according to the State of the States report, Oregon spends nothing on its TAG students compared to its neighbors in Idaho, Washington, and California. That's criminal. And the governor and his budgets and the superintendent's comments seem to indicate that maybe this is a problem that we can address in the next biennium or if you go to annual sessions. But I think the message that it sends by having nothing in this year's budget is that we've already been to our local school boards, and we've been to our administrators at our high school, and they tell us they have nothing to give us. And so when the governor doesn't have anything in his budget, it sends a message to our local school boards and our local school districts that this isn't an important issue, or it's only an issue relating to a few. But in Salem-Keizer, TAG students make about 10% of our student population, and they're being left behind. I have one child with special needs, and I have two children with special needs. One is in 100th percentile for literature and reading and writing, and she hasn't been challenged since third grade. And this year, our West Salem High School decided to eliminate the honors classes for the incoming freshmen as part of the small learning community fix. And what you have is you have more TAG students and honors students dropping out because they're not getting more challenging work, they're getting more work. They see their classmates, they have to do a level for a C grade, a B grade, an A grade in the regular class, then they have to do more work just to get the honors credit. It's not fair to these kids, and the message that they get is that they're not important. They've been slipping through the cracks since they were first identified as TAG students. They were always kids in class that could do the work, do it well, do it quickly, and do it quietly. They didn't get any attention from those teachers in the elementary school, and now they're getting even less at the high school. We're going to have a brain drain. These kids are going to go out of state to go to college, and they're not going to come back to Oregon because they haven't been valued. And I guess that's all I want to say. Thank you.
You said it very well, Representative Clem. And I think other people probably want to explore some of the early parts, but your last comment actually keyed in on that earlier question that I had, which is it quite common to see a talented and gifted child leave the state after high school?
I see it all the time. And this year in West Island High School, with the elimination of freshman honors classes, they won't give us numbers, but anecdotally from my child, she doesn't know who in her class as an honors student. The one or two classes where she does know who the honors students are, they might be two or three. They're not having any of the dialogue that my other daughter had last year in her honors classes, where all the kids were going in the same direction at the same time. There weren't the disciplinary problems. Now, you may call this a problem of the bourgeois middle class and maybe say that this is affluent students, parents of affluent, but they're not. This is a problem of waitresses and bus drivers who want more for their children, who've given them the support. There are also minority students that are being directly affected by this because they're bright and they're not getting the education that they need. They're not getting the more challenging work. And when you talk about No Child Left Behind, you're always talking about taking the child who might have a learning disability, but you're forgetting that these TAG students are unique and have differentiated learning needs. They're just is integral to the success and the economic development of this state as bringing the other child up.
If I just follow up, the way this committee is organized, this is the full education committee, which is great because you get everybody. I'm on the higher ed subcommittee, so if there are going to be further hearings that will probably take place in the other one regarding kind of, you know, what's happening in the schools, so I may not get to be there. So I wanted to get one piece out. For about the last 4 years, I've been thinking about something. I was chair of the Oregon Student Assistance Commission, which gives out the financial aid. And one of the things that we had proposals from this body sometimes was, you know, what are we doing to help our students who are high achievers not leave? And, you know, I just would think to myself, how much emphasis, and I went to Oregon State, how much emphasis did we spend trying to get an athlete here? How much money did we spend trying to go flying all around the country trying to get someone to come to Oregon to play basketball or football? And then how much attention did we spend as a state trying to make sure our own people didn't leave? You know, our Bill Gates, who could, you know, whether they came from poverty or wealth, would still employ millions of people over the course of their one idea. And so I've been thinking about how to kind of, without, you know, some of the proposals were incredibly expensive because they gave every student, if you'd get a 3-point or higher, free college, and it, you know, it costs $50 trillion or something. But I've been thinking about how do you create sort of a SWAT team, you know, where they get a letter from the governor and they, you know, Speaker of the House, and there may be some scholarships. We work with the Community Foundation to make things, and that they feel just like a star athlete does, who the coach is sitting on their couch with their parents saying, do not leave Oregon, we're going to make it worth it for you to stay. And that's something that, you know, through the higher ed subcommittee and over time, we can continue to try and create that program. But it's been a big concern because, you know, I have people in my family who left, and they're doing great things in Washington, and it makes me really sad. You know?
Well, I grew up in New England, and I went to California to take advantage of their tuition-free education mm-hmm. program because I couldn't afford it. I was the middle-of-the-road B student, one working parent, knew too much to qualify for financial aid, and I didn't. I couldn't afford college in New England, so I came out to California, became a resident, put myself through school. But I can't even think about college for my children because I'm trying to keep them engaged in high school. Thank you.
Just a couple comments. One is, Mitch has an answer in part, Representative Greenlick, in that we have a lot of TAG kids who do make it through our system and choose to go to other states because of the reputation of their universities. And he's talked about that the last number of sessions, about, you know, having that kind of research institution. It is a drawing factor for that as well. But the bigger issue, I think, that is difficult for people, even in the education industry, to understand is how uniquely different true TAG kids think. And, you know, I hate to say it, but I think there are people who are intimidated by their intelligence and their abilities, and it may makes it difficult at times to find the places that you can place them in a school, and finding those teachers who also have those skills and who are tagged is really important. So having an institution, a school district that pays so you can get the brightest people to teach as well, gives us the opportunity to put those kids in places where they have that mentor in the school and that person who can do things. You can do it in a small school model, you can do it in a large school model, but I think one of the things that's in our tag, if you look at the state's requirements, one of those issues is that there needs to be every day a time for these kids to be together, not by age, but by their ability.
That's not happening.
I know it isn't. I know that it isn't all the time.
And that's what I mean. To go back to the teachers and the local school district, they direct us to our school board and our school district administrators, and we've had those meetings, and we hear the direction is not coming to them from above, and so we're just going empty. So thank you very much for your time.
Thank you for speaking. Are there other folks who'd like to speak? Why don't you both come up and you both want to make statements?
There's two chairs, three mics.
Go ahead, Doug.
Thank you, Chair Buckley. To all the representatives, my name is Bert Canner. Especially to Representative Greenlick before he leaves. I have been teaching for 47 years, and in math, so Representative Roland, you and I share. But you have honored me as a teacher today with your concern for education, and especially bringing up the tag. Although over the years I've done many honors classes, only recently have I really got involved with TAG. I've written a program called Math Scene Investigation for Elementary TAG High-Enders, which has been highly successful. In fact, three of the parents here have children in that program. It has taught me a lot, and I've started reading a lot of books about TAG students and their needs, like getting them together because they speak a different language, and they need that isolated time where they can communicate with others of their same intelligence. Now, I have also, this year, I actually started my PERS, but I'm still one-third time with Salem-Keizer doing the gifted program. But I've also started mentoring students. And in that respect, and of course a math teacher is going to see things in terms of a normal curve, and that symmetry where we're giving a lot of attention to the special ed kids, and they need it, and we know we have to do that. But at that other end of the spectrum, the TAG student has to have that same individual attention, and the higher they are out, as they're beyond three standard deviations, and I'm working with two of them right now, they need almost a one-on-one time, otherwise they feel like their time is wasted. So one of the things I would encourage, and Brian, you're my representative, and I probably should get together with you, but if we can help create a mentoring system and use business and industry, and maybe use some of the dollars from business and industry, because that would aid them also. It would take some of the onus off of this whole educational system, so they wouldn't have to carry the load. And yet it would serve an intel very well, and I think they do some of it. They do it, and they teach to the future. But every company, and I started going to Truett Brothers here in town, to do something like that, and they were kind of predisposed to doing it, but I was told to halt. But yet the idea remains strong with me that, and I think you give me the arm to propel me forward, for every one of those gifted students get some kind of mentoring, relative someone to their ability, to bring in some of the engineers from Intel and put them together and let these kids talk mathematics, because that's what they really need to do. To learn it, you have to talk it. And if we can get a program like that going, I don't think it would be that expensive. It could be very efficient and very productive. And now, as I reach the twilight of my career, I'd like to leave something with the field, and I would work on excuse me, on that idea. So thank you for the time.
Just add a quick comment back. Thank you for your work, your career. And if you would, if I could ask you to actually speak with Thrift St. Clair, I would like to request at least if you develop two proposals over the next week, because we do have to get them filed.
Sure.
But I'd like to get something in before January 29th.
Mr. Chair, if I might, just so in case as I go to process now Measure 37, other things I don't forget, let's get together and talk about the Aspire model that's used for other types of things for this. Because Aspire, we generated it actually at the commission I used to run out of private dollars until this budget cycle, but it was a mentoring program. You bring people back in, you make sure kids know how to fill out their college applications, help them with essays, but it brought in retired educators and community members, and it took the load off the counselors and the teachers to do this thing. So it's a model that we've done it, and we're in 86 high schools now, and no tax money went into that at that point still. So thank you.
I've been asked just to state my name again, so I'm Bert Tanner.
Thank you, Mr. Tanner. Would you like to?
Yeah, sure. My name is Sue Love, and I'm a parent of a 14-year-old boy who is at West Elm High School. He's a ninth grader. He was up there last year as an eighth grader. He took honors geometry, and he took German 1. And he's up there this year full-time. We homeschooled from fifth grade through eighth grade because after fourth grade, we could tell he was not being appropriately challenged in the classroom, so we pulled him out. And when he went back full-time now into high school, his 20th century studies teacher, wonderful man, emailed us and said, "Your son knows everything I am going to cover in this class this year, so I need to work with you and figure out what we need to do for him." So it's been kind of interesting. His teacher has been busy with a lot of other kids in the classroom, so right now he hasn't been able to give Ian special things that go along with what's going on. So we're working on that. But he's a great teacher, Mr. Whiteley. Representative Lem isn't here anymore, but a paper that he might want to read is on the NAGC website, www.nagc.org. And I believe it's entitled A Quiet Crisis, and it's by, I believe, Joseph Renzulli, and it covers about science and engineers. And they've got a lot of good resources on there. Being a tag parent, you do a lot of reading. So here's one book that actually Laura Pekkanen, who I'm sure that's a very familiar name to you, and, gave to me. And another book that if you haven't read yet, people should really get a copy of this. You can order it if you get online on Nation Deceived. You can get, you can request it, and it will be sent to you for free. Or some of this stuff has probably been covered, but Oregon has a tag mandate, but $0 for funding. Idaho, $500,000, they spend $38 per student. California, $48 million, they spend $100 per student. These are our neighbors. Washington, $6.5 million. This is from the State of the States report. Oregon has a part-time tag specialist. Oregon students deserve to have a full-time tag specialist at ODE. Oregon needs to require teachers to have training in working with and teaching talented and gifted students. There's an excellent program at Pacific University, and I believe it's probably the only one in the state that gives a certification for gifted education. Teachers need to feel the support of their school district administration. There are a lot of very hardworking teachers out there, and they are not feeling it from their administration. They need to be given the funding and the time to take additional coursework. Tag students taking state assessments before the test, before the midpoint of the school year, they are, some of them are well exceeding the passing scores. My son, I'm not trying to brag, but he came home the other day and he's taking Honors Algebra 2 as a freshman, and he took the sim math test, the 10th grade math test, and I went online to look to see where that score was, because we don't really understand it. Okay, so I went on there and looked, and his score was well beyond the exceeding point, and he is not even halfway done with the school year. Okay. And there are many other students that are having the same thing that's going on. Okay. Oregon has students that are sitting, waiting to learn something new in the classroom. Some of them are staring at the floor. Some of them have been told that when they're finished with their work, that they can go ahead and read their Oregon Department of Driver's Education manuals. These are students who love to learn, and they are meeting many of the standards that Mrs. Castillo spoke about already, you know, even before the school year starts.
I'm sorry to interrupt.
Okay.
If you have one more statement to make. Or
yes, that's fine. Solution. No, actually, I'm finished. That was my last one.
Thank you.
Oregon, this was a point that someone had brought up, I believe it was Representative Clem, in that Oregon will need to invest in their education system in order to attract talent. There are a lot of families I belong to, listserv, parents from other states are asking, we're thinking about moving to Oregon.
Right.
And then what happens, though, is other parents will get on there and they will say, you don't want to come here because they're asking about the schools.
Yeah.
And that is very serious.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not going on there and doing that last Oregon, but I'm just letting you know. I see it all the time on this particular listserv, and it's very sad.
We're determined to turn that around. Hopefully, within a year's time, you'll be able to get on that listserv and say, get to Oregon.
Right.
It's a fantastic place.
Yeah.
Thank you all for being
thank
you for your patience and in being here.
Real quick, can I just ask one quick question? On the book A Nation Deceived, is that available through the MAGC website?
No, it's not. It's a Templeton National Report. I can give you the website.
Okay.
I'll give it to you afterwards.
I'll talk to you when we're done.
Okay.
Members, thank you for your patience and cooperation.
Thank you very much.
And thank you for coming to be here today.
Let
me close this hearing.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay.
I'm just going to get even if you don't have them to do it.